Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello, welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Friday, January 9th, 2026, episode 121. For those of you keeping notes, today, the solid-state battery that sounds too good to be true. Volvo released the range of the EX60 ahead of its full reveal, and Hyundai's move from EVs into robots, and of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today is the Aureate, Mr. Tom Mulloughany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of YouTube State of Charge channel. Dominic Yoni, still on his travels, will be for a while yet. Longtime EV journalist, check out his YouTube channel, Drive Electric with Dominic. And today's special guest alongside Liv, who contributes to A Girl's Guide to Cars. Patrick and Liv have their electric duo YouTube channel. Welcome to the show, Patrick. It's early because you're in Vegas for CES, so thank you for such an early start for the audience to watch and listen to you this week.
It's only an hour or so early for me to get up, but Liv's getting ready, so she may join us at some point. But yeah, always a fun time to hop on.
Yeah, so CES in Vegas, it's just sprawling. Not just the event area itself, but these things get spread all over Vegas. And so you've been so busy. There's definitely a lot to talk about cars, vehicle to home, things like that. Check out your channel for anyone watching or listening to get all of the details. Let's start with a video of yours that's blowing up, almost 100,000 views already. You were on the ground at CES to talk about one of the biggest stories that, frankly, not only the EV media, but so much of the world's media caught on to, a solid-state battery that's going into a motorcycle. It got a lot of attention. An 18-month-old startup calling themselves Donut Labs, they put a video out with their publicity-savvy CEO claiming to have beaten the industry giants that have their billions in R&D with a relative handful of people in an investment in a small Finnish company not so long ago, which makes supercapacitors. We'll get onto that in a moment. They say they've invented a new solid-state battery that is close to getting into riders, because for a motorbike, hands. So, the specs, 400 watt-hours per kilogram. That is, in context, call it twice what you'd find in a road-going EV. The ability to go to 100% in 5 minutes, not a 10 to 80. And we all know how voltage sag happens either after 80, 90, even the last 1%. They say 100% charge in 5 minutes. 100,000 life cycles and a lower price than traditional lithium-ion batteries. Oh, and zero fire risk. Oh, and it'll work in extreme temperatures. Oh, and it's made from abundant materials. So you got to talk to the CEO, Patrick. That's a video that's almost 20 minutes or so. Check it out. We're showing it for our viewers of the podcast right now. Their first client is the company which they were spun out of, Verge Motorcycles, which is really convenient that no one external has had to validate this. I've got my tongue slightly in cheek there, haven't I? Patrick, tell us all about your interview with the CEO. You approached this with an open mind. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how you have to, when you're going on the show floor and you're talking to somebody, it's, you're basically just going to get them regurgitating whatever they put out in the press release. I did try to probe a little bit and ask about the battery chemistry. Like, what is this made out of? He wasn't forthcoming in that. And I got to give a shout out real quick because, like, everything was just so crazy that first morning. And I'm like, we got to go to Donut Lab first. And we get over there and Liv just was like, recognize, that's the CEO. Let me go grab him. He didn't have any PR people around him or anything like that. And he's like, yeah, sure. Let's just hop on this video. So thanks to her, we got this. And he was very just sort of like, he rattled off all the stats. And like, I knew them, but I'm like, these words coming out of his mouth, like, pinch me, it felt like I was in a dream because it was like, you're basically every negative that we sort of talk about when we talk about EV batteries, every time one comes out LFP updated, from CATL or whatever, we're like, well, it's still not quite there. They talk about cold weather performance and you're like, yeah, you're still losing like 20% of your performance in cold weather. They talk about improved life cycles. And they're like, yeah, we're going up to 5,000 life cycles. And then they're just throw out like 100,000 life cycles, amazing stats. We've seen all the comments on our video and now we have like Gemini, like summarizing it for us when we go in and look, and it's like about half the people think he's a scam artist and half the people think this is a breakthrough. So it's sort of like, we got a lot of comments on the video. We haven't even had a chance to respond. We did go back by and try to just do a little bit of a follow-up, and by that point he was swarmed by people, and he did say, goes, I've heard about you guys' video or whatever, and he turned to his like assistant and was like, we got to get them the numbers. And we're like, what numbers? He's like, we're gonna have some numbers for you guys, and we'll get those over to you. Whether that happens or whether that was just to get us to leave or whatever, who knows. But supposedly in the next couple of weeks we should have some lab certification from this. I don't know if it's a party lab or their own stuff. And I will note that, like, as we were talking to like some other people around the CES, we ran into just like a lady. It was like literally at some other event, and they break down stuff, not like Monroe, breaking down the whole car, but they break down components and they have done batteries before. And she's like, ooh, we need to get one of those. And I was like, I don't know if they're selling the batteries to anybody or if it's just going to be this motorcycle. And I heard like from her and like somebody else is like that there's people that are just like, they understand that it's going to be in the motorcycle. And they literally went to Verge and were like, can we buy the motorcycle? And you just, whatever batteries you're going to put in the motorcycle, can you just send us those? We don't care about the motorcycle. So it sounds groundbreaking. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So now you've had a few days to digest it and read all of the other coverage as well. Where are you? Because you looked him in the eye and he told you about the state of the technology. Where are you with it?
It's hard not to get caught up in the excitement there. I mean, somebody's literally telling you, like, this is this game-changing technology. He seemed very confident, and it wasn't, like, no hesitation. Didn't seem like, we weren't handed off to the PR guy that's, like, telling us this stuff, and you're, like, the PR person is literally hired 2 months ago to just read off a stat sheet. So I felt very confident at the time, and then I started reading some of the comments. I'm like, yeah, they really, like, how in the world is this possible? My biggest thing was, we've seen people doing solid state in very limited capacity. And they're like, yes, we've proven that it can be done. Now we have to scale it. That's going to take 4 years or 3 years or whatever. But for them to say, like, we're going to get to tens of gigawatt hours in the next couple of years, I'm like, that's super impressive. But I have my doubts. Like, it's okay to, you're going to come up with groundbreaking technology, but to scale it has always been the problem with battery tech. So I feel confident that they are probably going to have something in this Verge motorcycle in Q1 2026 or first half of 2026. But to scale it up to anything else, I'm not sure. And I just don't see how it's going to happen. Now, I will say they have the Verge motorcycle that they're connected to. And I forgive me because I forget the name. It's been a long week at CES. They had their military application literally right on the other side of the booth, but it was divided by a half wall. And they have the same battery display out, but they have some military vehicles, very military applications. And they're we're going to have a very distinct wall separating us. And we've been working with Donut Labs, and they're we're actually basically the same company. But we have to keep separate because to sell to certain countries, meaning NATO, the US or whatever, they can't have any components from certain other countries. So they're we're going to have different supply chains. And it sort of clicked when he said that they wanted to bring production to UK, United States. Then I'm oh, is this where they're potentially getting a lot of their funding? Maybe that's how they're, figuring out some of this scaling, is that to be able to have this technology not come from a Chinese company, not be made in China. And in the video, I specifically asked, what is the battery chemistry? And I, if you haven't watched the video, I thought it was interesting because he's we're going to keep that to ourselves now. Somebody's going to tear it apart and they'll learn the chemistry at that point, but we'll just keep it to ourselves for now. So, I'm 50-50.
Yeah, I'm the same though. A fascinating comment from someone who has obviously got a very kind heart, Jay Beck, in the comments says, why lie? If most of what he's pitching isn't true, he would send his company into bankruptcy and his reputation. Yeah, I agree with you. I think you've got a wonderful worldview, a very generous point of view. And I used to feel that way before the likes of Trevor Milton rolled a hydrogen truck down a hill and lied to everyone about Nikola, which now has one employee left, the administrator doing the insolvency. He went behind bars and did a hard time. If he actually went to jail or never actually got there because of appeals, and then Trump pardoned him, but found guilty of fraud, and Fisker didn't make it. Why do these CEOs lie? And no one's calling this chap a liar, obviously. Multiple reasons. Multiple reasons. The EV industry, where it is in 2026, with some dark clouds around it, doesn't need this kind of hype. If it's a lie, it would harm it and do way more harm than good, because it's, we told you. We told you there's nothing in this. Dom, though, Dominic, you have been looking into, you've done the hard yards for us. You've been looking into the investment they made in that Finnish supercapacity company 3 months ago, whenever it was, and explain to us idiots what's going on here.
Okay. So I've spent a bunch of time looking at this over the last few days. I started to make a video, but then I was on the wrong path at that point. So using some hints from that Zeroth video, there's a video on YouTube, Zeroth channel. He has takes a kind of a skeptical look at it. But he mentioned the connection with Nordic Nano, which I had seen, but then I'd forgotten. So I dug into this company, Nordic Nano, which Donut Labs invested in. And as part of that deal, Donut Labs CEO, Marco Lehtomäki, he's joined the board of the directors there. So one of the technologies that Nordic Nano has been developing is solid state batteries. They have a lot of products under development, actually. But its chief scientist, Bella, I figured out how to say this earlier, Bahuske, doesn't have a background in traditional battery technology, but her recent academic work focuses on covalent triazine frameworks, or CTFs. So this gives you a hint that this is a very novel type of battery. It's not like your traditional sort of batteries. And we'll get into this real quick. But I'll spare you all the really scientific language. But one of the very few possibilities that could have all of these stated characteristics, plus a few other ones that we haven't mentioned here yet, the ability to be molded, the ability to tune the voltage up to 4.1 volts. So the only thing I could find that could do all those different things is a redox active covalent triazine framework battery, or CTF battery for short. So these batteries, they don't work like traditional ones where you have lithium or salt ions. you know, parking in a cathode material. Instead, they have like an inner structure made of this CTR, this covalent triazine frameworks, tuned to different voltage potentials. So the same kind of element, but with different voltage tunings. So it creates the voltage potential, creates the flow of current. So when the electricity is pumped in, electrons sprint along these structures and park themselves on sticky nitrogen spots. So positive ions then make their way from the electrolyte and sit beside these electrons to stabilize them. So that's why, this is why the current doesn't slow down after 80%. So usually in traditional batteries, you get up to 80%. It takes a while for the ions to find a place to park in the cathode. Actually, it's more electrons. They aren't parking. They're just stopping on this lattice work. That's the CTR lattice work inside the battery. Right. So they, yeah, they sit, just sit on the main structure of those electrodes. So I'm not a scientist, and I might have some of this wrong, but I'm pretty confident that I've got most of it right. But there's still lots of reasons not to get excited, you know. So I feel, you know, I don't feel like he's trying to run a scam or anything. They've got a motorcycle shipping within weeks. People will have this motorcycle within weeks. So with like up to 33 kilowatt hours of batteries in this motorcycle, which is unheard of kind of size of battery. I mean, I've seen maybe 20, just a little over 20 in the Lightning motorcycles, electric motorcycle from a couple years ago. But 33 kilowatt hours in a motorcycle is kind of nuts. And so customers will have that in their hands very soon. So if it's not real, if it doesn't work, that's, you know, I don't know why you'd go through all this expense and trouble. But there's still lots of reasons not to get excited. So really quickly, and I'll let Tom have a go at this. So it's going to take time for donut to scale. Like real world and real world use might also expose flaws with the technology. I don't know that it's had a lot of testing in the real world. And when you put, you know, like a novel technology like this in all these different places and batteries and different vehicles and types of machines like drones, we're talking about flying drones, you know, things go wrong. And then you find the weaknesses that maybe in your technology, especially with something so novel. I mean, it's like a brand new kind of thing, really. And so also, yeah, so the price might not be as low as hoped. Like the prices, so the materials aren't like, so there's no lithium, no cobalt. So we don't have to worry about finding the raw materials. But developing those, like CTRs or different organic polymers for this thing, that could be tricky, could be expensive, I don't know. And then also there's other batteries that aren't that far off. You know, by the time these guys scale to a significant amount, you know, Toyota's going to have its Lexus SUV out, and it's going to have a solid state battery. And it's a gravimetric density. The energy density is even higher than this is. So this is 400 watt hours per kilogram. I believe the Toyota battery is 450 to 500 is what I've been seeing. So there's, you know, and there's still like sodium ion batteries out there for that we use for storage that could still undercut these guys in price and still be a going, you know, ongoing technology. Yeah. So, Tom, what do you think?
What do I think? I don't know if this term is common around the country or if it's just a New Jersey thing, but I call bullshit. I think my skepticism is rooted in the fact that I've been doing this a long time, guys. You know, Dom is probably as long as I have, since 2008, 2009, longer than, say, most of the people covering the EV industry. And Dom, how many times have we seen and heard of companies that are, you know, that they have the God battery, that this is going to revolutionize the industry, that everyone's going to want this. It's, you know, the energy density is off the charts.
E-store
number one, you know, with the, with their ultra capacitors, you know, and, but even the batteries and, you know, we've just heard it so many times that maybe I'm jaded from just I won't let my hopes get up anymore. You know, obviously if it's true with the fact that it doesn't use rare earth metals, it's the energy density, you can build them in any shape or form. They even said you could make it in a snowflake if you wanted to. Like all these things are just like what everybody, if someone could tell you like, okay, you build a battery, you have no restrictions. You could, you know, you don't have to worry about the laws of physics or anything. What would you want? This is what people would say. So I don't think we're that lucky. I don't think we're the industry is going to get what would literally kill internal combustion. If this is everything they say it is, guys, and I think you'll all agree with me, that the ice age is over, you know, this year. Like this is the pivotal point that people would talk about, you know, a century from now, like when the God battery was developed. So I'm sorry. I can't believe that we're at that point now. Do I hope it's true? Sure. Do I have any proof that it's fake? Why would I see in the comments people saying, well, why would they lie about this? They're going to reveal it in 3 months. We've seen this, you know, time and time again. We've seen people that maybe they have something, but it's not fully baked. And, you know, they make this announcement so they get investment because, like, we're only $10 more million into actually making this work. But then that, you know, 99th, that 1% of why they couldn't get it to work before is something that's, you know, a hurdle they can't, you know. But that was what eStore seemingly was so close to getting that ultra capacitor work. And I forget whatever that the final issue was, but it just wasn't, they just could never get over that. No matter how much money you threw at it, it wasn't going to work. So, you know, I don't know. I it's great that they're saying they're going to produce this battery in a couple of months. People are actually going to be able to third party independent validate it, you know, which is awesome. But we've seen so many scams. I can't get my hopes up anymore. If this was coming from, you know, Panasonic or Cadel or something, I'd feel a lot better than, you know, donut battery. Like where do we go buy these at Dunkin' Donuts? You know, like I'm sorry. I just, that's, I've been burned so many times. I've let my hopes get up that, you know, here we are, guys, this is it, you know. But, listen, if it proves to be true, I'll be the first one to come on here and say, I was dead wrong. This is awesome. Congratulations, guys. I apologize for trashing you on the Batteries Included podcast, but I'm sorry. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I think you can say these days whatever you want, really, and it seems like you can get away with it, which is the sad state of kind of, you know, where we are. If I was working at QuantumScape, 15 years, Pharasys, 17 years, Sunwoda have one, CATL, like Tom says, Goshen have a 0.2 gigawatt hour pilot line running. I think there's the first validation solid state battery went into Hongqi this week. There was a photo coming out of China. So it's close technology, but it's close
tech. Oh, Martin, you froze up on us.
He froze for you guys too?
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll come back in a second.
Oh. Yeah, hopefully. I just want to comment. One of the commenters said, if it's true, I hope the inventors get crazy rich. Don't worry about that. If it's true, like Elon Musk will be asking them for a loan. You know, that's how big this would be. So, Martin, go ahead. You're on mute, Martin.
You're muted. You're muted, Martin. Can't hear you.
It's that trashy UK internet, guys.
maybe he's having some issues over there, some technical difficulties.
So you know, I mean, that's, I think we've all kind of commented on it. Patrick, I'm interested to hear your reaction to my reaction.
No, I think I'm in the same boat. I'm skeptical. I'm enthusiastic and happy that they've announced this because, you know, it's some really cool sounding stuff. But I also look at it as like, you know, because somebody, you know, I did look at a couple of comments, maybe responded to a couple, and they're like, why didn't you ask the hard questions? And I'm like, because whatever he says, it doesn't matter. It has to be verified by a third party. And we actually have to see the production actually scale, like all these other things that are external to anything that's going to be on the show floor at CES. So I'm just waiting for that, you know. And it's like, we've seen this with so many other technologies as well, beyond batteries, where it's like, it's going to do this by the end of the year. It's like, okay, that's great. I don't really, you know, I'll be excited for you in a very calm way. at the end of the year, if you actually do it, then I'll be really excited. But it, yeah, everything has to be verified by third parties. We actually have to see this stuff. And it, you know, it goes back to, you know, like manufacturing this stuff is hard, which is why we see the solid state. Like when they are working on that, they go through so many test production lines and they go into a pre-production line. And a lot of it is just like failure rates. Like, what if this thing is like, it's great, but we have a 5% failure rate? You know, that's like a disaster if that's the case, because then you get all of the negative sides of like these things just randomly fail or whatever. So there's so many little caveats. Like I'm skeptical, and I'm not an expert. So it's sort of like, why would I jump in and go like, well, let me, you know, figure out if this is true or not. It's like, I'll let somebody else verify. And then if it's true, we'll this will be revolutionary, and everybody will be looking for their IPO and like, can I buy a bunch of stock?
Yeah. And you said something about, you know, you hope that it's true and you're glad that they came out and, you know, did this. My thought on that is, if it's not true, if this doesn't develop into what they said it was, it's really disappointing, because I think it hurts the industry. I think it furthers that attitude that, you know, this whole industry is a sham. You know, like every time that company that announces whatever, you know, like with the Trevor Milton, and, you know, just go down the line. Every time a company promises X and then fails and gets exposed as a fraud or whatever, I think it hurts electric vehicles, even like subliminally in people's minds, that they feel like the whole thing is a sham, because a lot of people still don't believe that electric vehicles are going to be the main form of personal transportation in their lifetime. You know, they still think that, you know, this is just, you know, a green scam, and, you know, they're going to go away in a few years. And every time we have these giant announcements that, oh, wow, this is going to happen, and then it doesn't, I think it hurts and pulls the whole industry down. So for the sake of the industry, I really hope that this is real. It would have been great if they kind of kept their mouth, you know, they didn't come out until they had motorcycles that they were selling and say, here, guys, drive this off the showroom, take it home. This, you know, take it apart when you get home. You know, I understand the need to go to CES, which is a big, a big industry event, the biggest industry event. But this is so big, this would have outshined CES. They could have held their own, you know, presentation 3 months from now when the motorcycles are ready for delivery. And it would have been, for crying out loud, it would have been bigger than CES. So they didn't need to be at CES. So the whole thing, I don't know, man. I hope it's true, but what are those sites that you can go and bet on the futures? I might go and throw some cash down on this thing being a total farce. I'm sure you could bet on it.
I mean, well, so the bike is shipping in a few weeks. So these things are in production. They have to be in production like right now. But like you say, it would have been, I think it would make a lot more sense to, you know, show the things actually working and doing the thing and then talking about it before anything ships. Because like you said, they could pull in all the hype, you know, for something of this technology magnitude, of this kind of stature. Yeah. They don't need CES, you know, really.
It's like Kyle, me, a couple other people, we went over to Munich because CATL was doing a new generation of their LFP battery. So they had some really good breakthroughs there. And even that, like the minor breakthroughs, they're like, here's our testing. You can see us testing, and here's the labs. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like, why didn't they do something like that? Which I get, you know, maybe they're just going like, just wait 3 weeks and you'll find out. But yeah, it seems like there could have been some of that. And I do agree with Tom. Like, it really almost worries me. Like, I don't mind us sort of like, we're all getting excited, but I almost don't want to share this like with my friends and stuff that are like the EV skeptics. Cause it's like all of their concerns about EVs, well, they're met with this battery. But then if it's like, it fails, they're going to be like, yeah, see, I told you.
See, exactly. See, it's just, you know, it's just a big scam. The whole electric vehicle thing, it's just a bunch of people scamming people out of money. and, you know, taking investments and, you know, all these companies going out of business, you know, and it's all a scam. And this just adds fuel to that fire. So hopefully for a myriad of reasons, hopefully this is true. Even if it's not 100% true, if this battery or UltraCap, whatever it is, if it can produce 80% of what they claim, that's a huge win, you know, and it gives another option. I mean, everything about it, you know, you could make the batteries in any size. It's got fantastic energy density. It doesn't use rare earth metals. It's like I said earlier, you know, if you could just fantasize and make up a battery, you know, without any restrictions, this is what it would be. So are we seriously that lucky? Like, is this industry going to really be that lucky that we're going to get like this battery that's just going to change everything? I guess, I mean, breakthroughs do happen. I just don't know if the breakthrough is going to happen in donut labs, you know, when you've got these other companies out there doing, you know, pouring billions into R&D on every type of battery and so forth. I hope it's true.
Man.
Hey, Martin, GMDS 44 has chipped in $10 Canadian for you to help you get your past due internet bills taken care of.
Yeah, this is the I blame the what's it called? A USB interface for my microphone. It's got made by Nikola. Trevor Milton patented this one, so it works as well as his trucks does. Let's talk us about something else that you saw at CES. What do you want to talk about, Patrick? Do you want to talk about Ford and their hands-off stuff or vehicle to home? Where should we go next?
You know, we actually came here. One of our goals was to find more vehicle to home stuff. I'll tell you what was the most annoying thing about CES. It's like everybody has a damn robot and humanoid looking and literally ones that were just having hands on display. They had it folding clothes. They had another one playing ping pong, another one dancing to Michael Jackson. I'm so over robots already. But we didn't find as much charging stuff this year. We didn't find, you know, we were supposed to talk to one vehicle to home company, but they weren't actually on the show floor. They were going to meet us outside of one of the like side conferences, and then just never connected with them. So a little bit disappointed on that. To me, like vehicle to home, vehicle to grid, like we've done some videos with SIG Energy that have got a lot of attention. So I was like, let's go find some others. We talked to Honda late last year. They're doing some vehicle to home stuff, which is really cool, on their Zero series, and working with Emporia, which a lot of us all know. So I was excited by that. They really didn't do a big thing here. So the vehicle to home stuff was sort of not as big as I was expecting. And I think it's like the big news of 2026. We've been hearing about it next year, next year, next year. It feels like we're there now. We have some companies actually doing that. I did visit some of the like companies that do home battery storage, and they have the units on their wall, but it's like they literally like have all of the stuff. They have like, here's the inverter, here's the controller, here's this. And then they'll say like vehicle to home, but it's just like a little symbol. And I'm like, do you guys actually do it? And they're like, yeah, we'll need a special whatever, blah, 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 blah. That's up to you. So it's like I'm like, come on. Like, I thought we were here. So that's disappointing. The Ford hands-off stuff is, to me, it was a bit interesting because Ford wasn't exhibiting. They just did one of the panel sessions. And I'll probably do a deep dive video into it just because, you know, we have a historic audience of a lot of Ford followers because we started off as the Mach-E vlog. But it just is sort of a part of their overall strategy. The way Ford announces things, you know, with the universal electric vehicle platform, UEV, they announce the platform, they announce that they're going to be building it in Louisville, and then rather than going like, here it all is, they're going to like let us know all of these different tidbits. And I think their biggest point that they were trying to make is like, they're going to do level 3 hands-off on this vehicle that's starting at 30,000. Of course, you know, one thing I couldn't get out of the back of my mind, they're like, we want to bring level 3 hands off, eyes off to everybody. And I'm like, yeah, but how much per month? You know, and so it's sort of, you know what I mean? It's like, if you want it for everybody, but then you charge a subscription fee. But I think it really is great that they are planning this. It's something that I've been looking at and sort of following for years, because we have a Mach-E. They were doing Argo AI, which was a joint venture. They shut that down. Everybody's like, oh, they're done with it. They actually immediately set up Latitude AI, which hired most of the people out of the joint venture. So they've been doing stuff for a while. And, you know, the AI name, you can tell they've been doing, you know, integrating LLM AI into their autonomous driving stuff. And we knew that was coming for future generations. So now it makes sense. It's like, if you know, we're following them, you're like, yeah, this is the natural progression. We knew that they were looking at doing a lot more stuff in-house with the UEV. And they talked about that. They're bringing the development of the hardware in-house. It's going to be basically the big computer that's going to do infotainment, audio, ADAS. So all of that's being brought into a computer. A lot of it's mimicking, you know, Rivian, Tesla, obviously. But they're getting costs down by 30%. And then going back to their UEV platform, they're reducing the number of connectors. They're doing like a zonal architecture. So it's just like they're letting us see like all of these domino pieces come together. But the really great thing that for me, it's always like getting that feel of like watching whoever's talking about the stuff that's coming. And they had Doug Field, that's, you know, leading this whole effort. And I thought it was neat because Ed Lowe from MotorTrend was asking him, like, what are people going to say, like, after they see this? You know, your competitors, I'm sure Ford has torn apart their competitors. They talk about the Chinese vehicles all the time. Mm. When people get the Ford UEV and they tear it down, what's going to be their reaction? And he says they're going to be pissed off.
Mm.
Because they're going to be like, wow, Ford is – done a great job. And he said like that a couple of times, talking about like what Ford is doing in this UEV. And I like those type of attitudes. I like seeing that type of attitude. And it's not in not in like, it's going to be this. And it's, you know, like with this battery, it's going to be this spec, this spec, this spec. And it's, you just, obviously everybody's going to be blown away. It's more of like, just wait and see. And it's like this arrogant confidence, but in a good way, that I like to see. Because we've seen, again, like with beyond batteries, so many people to just like rattle off all these specs. And it's sort of like, well, can I drive from here to San Francisco without charging? Yeah, it'll do that. Yeah, it'll do this. But he's just like, yeah, this is going to be great. It's going to be really, really good. And they believe they're driving the cost down, which I think is the biggest story out of this, is level three on a around $30,000 EV would be fantastic, even if it does have a monthly subscription fee. And bringing things in house is something that, you know, we act like this is new for Ford, but they've already been bringing stuff in house, and they talked about that, and it just is going to continue that. They've been working on it for years to do all of this stuff. And I feel like we're just around the corner. And after all the news with the Lightning, it's really great to see that, they're now sort of like, it's almost like, unfortunate the Lightning is gone, but it gives them like this open space. Now let's focus on the UEV and go full steam talking about it and getting ready for it. They shut down the Escape production line in December, and they're starting to retool for the UEV. And to me, that's a very encouraging. Of course, you have to do that before you can go into production, but it's sort of like they're giving up a production line that was producing anywhere between 150 to 300,000 gas Escapes per year. And now you're shifting to a full EV platform. They must have some confidence that they're going to be selling at least 150,000 of these a year. And they also talk about they're going to be able to produce them faster than they were the Escape. So maybe some decent numbers coming out of this.
Martin, you're on mute.
Sorry, but I am back. They said, buy a Mac. No, not they. Kyle said, buy a Mac. He's like, you've got the iPhone and the watch. Just why are you on a PC? Almost every week. Oh, it's not if, it's when this thing crashes and when I'm on a live stream. But it's a bit of jeopardy when you're watching. When will it crash? I enjoy it. Was it the $30,000 thing? Is that a 30 grandish car? Or have Ford talked about, I don't know, Tom, you know this, or Patrick, is it a $30,000 vehicle, like the Leaf and like the Bolt?
From, like, we went to the August 11th announcement in Louisville, and some of the things about that is, like, they are very, very, like, it's going to be $30,000. Now, we know that they have talked recently, in the recent days, that it will be rear-wheel drive standard range. They will have extended range. They will have dual motor, which I sort of expected in any case. But one of the things that I thought was interesting, they want it to be pretty feature complete at $30,000. And I think this sort of shows, like, what they're talking about. Like, they want the $30,000 EV to be capable of level 3, hands-free, eyes off the road. So they were very specific about they don't want to have a bunch of different trim levels. And that goes also to, like, reducing the cost. And I think they've taken a lesson a little bit, again, from Tesla. It's like, you don't have a huge variety of different trim levels. You know how every legacy OEM, they want to have the Select, the Premium Plus, the GT, you know, which is what we're all used to. But they're going to be like, it's going to be the 30,000 UEV, whatever they named the truck, and it should be pretty feature complete. One thing I want to throw out there, because I keep seeing this, and I've seen this online multiple times. About half the time, they'll go like, they'll refer to the EV truck, but then there'll be like little comments of like, you guys are going to be really pleased with the vehicles coming out of the UEV platform. And we know it's supposed to have multiple vehicles, but it feels almost like, maybe this is just wishful thinking, but that they are going to come quickly with multiple vehicles. And one of the things about the UEV platform is they were very specific. Jim Farley literally said, it's like, you can do multiple top hats, basically body styles, on one platform at one facility, which means you don't have to, we're going to produce a truck in Louisville. Now we got to find another factory to retool somewhere else to create an SUV. To me, that's him saying you could literally do a truck and then also do a SUV out of the same facility. So I'm hopeful that an SUV will come shortly after the truck, but who knows, maybe the truck is so radical and breakthrough, as Ford's been sort of hinting at, that we're like, yeah, we all want the truck.
I feel like Ford talking about hands off and autonomy and all these other things, given that it's a company that just binned off the Lightning and doesn't have anything to sell you now, the Transit is a good van, and the Mach-E continues to be improved, but they've got nothing really to sell you new for years now. I feel like it's walking into McDonald's, finding they've got no ingredients, and they're like, but the caviar's coming! And you're like, but I just want to get a burger first. And it's all great talking about all of this, but Ford is such a capable company, and they've got all the right people there, but they've got nothing new to sell you for years. It's a weird situation, but there we go. Hey, Tom, I saw you. Alex, our friend at E4 Electric channel, who I've been watching for 7, 8, 9 years, when I first got into EV podcasting and stuff, huge inspiration. He kind of took his channel down. He left it on for maybe a year ago. He's moved to Thailand and just got a bit disillusioned with social media and the fights that happen and the politics around EVs. But he kind of rebooted it a little bit to get you on. A few days ago, you were talking about the F-150. Good to see him making some EV content. It's not the restart of his channel, he said, but people still coming to you, Tom, for your thoughts on the Lightning, and you know, now we've had some time to digest it all. Where were you on Ford's news at CES?
So, you know, cautiously optimistic. If you want to throw the cold water on it, we've heard most of this with the T3. You know, and how that was going to revolutionize everything. I remember sitting in a Lightning with Jim Farley, and he looked at me and said, Tom, he goes, you know, I watch your content. I know, you know, you love your Lightning. And I said, 100%. I think it's fantastic. He said, when you see the T3, he said, you're going to forget about the Lightning really quickly. He said, it is generations beyond the Lightning. Okay, great. You know, I can't wait. You know, I'll be the first one online, Jim, to trade in my Lightning and get the T3. And then the T3's canceled. And now, oh, but wait a minute. I've got a new shiny new object here. You know, this is really the thing. Eh, don't worry about the T3. We were just playing around with that. So, you know, if you want to be, you know, I guess this podcast, I'll be the Doubting Thomas all along. Produce Ford, you know, they've got some great people over there. It's one of the companies that I have a really good relationship with. I'm driving the Lightning. I love my Lightning. But the truth of the matter is, talk is cheap. And it's all we've heard is talk. You know, when the Lightning first came out, when the Mach-E came out, I praised Ford. I said, this company gets it. They're electrifying their two staples, a Mustang and their F-150. That's Ford, like those two vehicles. So for them to electrify the backbones of their country, of their company, you know, I'm saying they're all in. And then since then, as you say, Martin, womp, womp, womp. You know, we've got nothing but some updates and promises. So, you know, this industry moves really quickly. It almost seems like that it's moving faster than Ford can keep up. So, you know, the T3 was going to be fantastic until Farley got a hold of a Chinese EV for a couple of months and said, the T3 is not going to be good enough. We need to reboot, you know. And so is this next platform going to be old news by the time it comes out? And they're going to say, you know what, we're scrapping it. This next platform, oh, wait till you see it. So, you know, what have you done for me lately? I'm all in. I hope Ford, I hope this next platform turns out to be everything they said. But, you know, show us. Put up or shut up, you know, like Donut Labs. You know, I know in this industry, it takes a while. You don't just produce things in a year unless you're in China where, you know, in 14 months, you can go from paper to pavement. And I know we work a little bit different, especially the big companies here. They're big, slower moving organizations. But, you know, does it sound great? It sounds fantastic. And if they deliver on everything that they're talking about now, Ford will be right back in the game within a year or so. You know, and the same thing with Donut Labs. If they produce what they say, you know, they're going to rule the industry. But, you know, it's just talk at this point. We haven't seen anything. I mean, I've asked Ford multiple times if I can get some sort of information on this next platform. And basically the answer is we're not ready to talk about that till probably next summer. So, okay.
Okay.
And you forgot the three-row SUV as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, you know, Patrick knows. He's been following Ford maybe even closer than I have been. And, you know, we've heard a lot from the company. And the sad thing is the two vehicles that they have produced, well, the three vehicles, the Transit. I don't have a lot of time sitting in the Transit. But the Mustang and the Lightning are really good electric vehicles. I mean, forget about the fact that the Lightning got canceled. We should have a dedicated podcast really doing a deep dive into why that happened. It didn't, you know, it wasn't canceled because the vehicle just failed as a vehicle. It's a damn good truck. Nearly everyone that has them raves about them. If you go on the forums online and everything, they're just like, I can't believe they're canceling this. I've owned six Fords. This is the best one I've ever owned. But, you know, so they have the ability to make a good vehicle. It's a little frustrating that they're taking a little bit of a pause now, going back to plug-in hybrid EREV on the trucks, scrapping the T3 and saying, we need a total reboot of our EV plans. And guys, come see us in a couple of years.
So. Mm. Yeah, I've owned a lot of Sony TVs, but I've never wanted them to make a car, but they are with Honda. The Afeela 1 isn't even in production, but they announced the Afeela 2. It's an SUV at the CES show this week. There wasn't a huge amount of car stuff. It was a lot of technology. CES, for a while, was becoming a car show over the last few years, and this year is noticeably different. I did tease the Volvo news earlier in the show. We'll get on to that. They have told us the range of the new EX60. There we go. There's the Afeela. Aphila. I don't know. I say it wrong on purpose just because it's stupid. I'm never going to have to turn down, you know, ask for a sponsorship from Aphila. So I don't really care. But silly name, silly project, stupidly expensive. No one will buy one. Hopefully, somebody who wants to put a PlayStation inside a car will go and buy one. The Volvo is really important because the XC60 is their most sold car in the history of the company, and they've got a big anniversary coming next year as well at Volvo. So it's a really big deal, and it's a good time to talk about that. But we will after Tom. You helped race 7 electric SUVs 2,000 miles from Canada to Key West. Now, one of the things we always say is the new technology we talk about is very important, but there's EVs out there now that are just incredible, and Kyle and the team at Out of Spec and yourself with the Eastern Edge Challenge saw 7 teams racing from the top of Maine to the Florida Keys in 3-row electric SUVs. That was the specs for this one. Footage is now online. Go watch that. Tom, you've got your own content on it as well. Tell us a little bit about what you were driving, and we've got some stats that we'll put on screen at the right time as well.
Yeah, sure. So, you teed it up nicely. Kyle asked me if I wanted to participate in one of these ridiculous races that Out of Spec Motoring organizes. This is like the 4th or 5th one, I think. He's asked me pretty much every time if I wanted to be one of the drivers. And the timing never was right. I could never break free from commitments that I had. But this time it worked out that I could do it. So I said, sure. And we started, it was called the Eastern Edge, as you said, and it was basically a Route 1 race. Although we didn't stick to Route 1 the whole time, it would have taken forever. But we started the race where Route 1 begins in Fort Kent, Maine, at the Canadian border. You could see Canada. Matter of fact, a few people walked over and just so they could say they went to Canada, they walked over the bridge and went to Canada, got a cup of coffee and came back. A few of the people that participated. So it started up at Fort Kent, Maine, and ended where the Route 1 South ends in Key West, Florida, or Route 1 North begins, whatever you want to say, 2,040 miles. And this was a race of 7 seat electric SUVs. So to be in the race, you had a seat 7, be an electric SUV. So Kyle had initially intended on racing Lucid Gravity, Tesla Model X, Cadillac Escalade IQ, Rivian R1S, Hyundai Ioniq 9, and a Volkswagen Buzz. But he couldn't get a Gravity from Lucid because, well, they couldn't commit to it. So there's a YouTube channel out there called Notch EV. Sip is the owner. If you're watching on YouTube now, he's the guy to my right with the black hat on. And he volunteered to have his car participate in the race. So Kyle said, great, you know, you could be one of the team and you'll provide the Lucid Gravity. Then like a week or two later, Lucid contacted Kyle and said, we made the arrangements. We have a Gravity for you. We're going to ship it to you, you know, next week. So now Kyle's like, oh, shoot, now we got 2 Gravities. What do we do with this? Do we run both of them? And he's like, yeah, let's run both of them. But we'll make different rules. One of them will only be able to use Tesla superchargers. And the other one can charge anywhere. Because a lot of people view, and for good reason, that the supercharger network is a superior network for reliability, for stall placement, and so forth. So a lot of people that own non-Tesla vehicles only charge at Tesla superchargers. I know I have followers that say, you know, as soon as it got open to superchargers, that's all I use now. I won't go to any other site. So Kyle's like, you know, to see if that's all you would use, how it would stack up against a Gravity that could charge it. Anyway, why don't we do this, Tom? And you're going to be in the vehicle that only can charge at Tesla superchargers. I have, you know, confidence that you know what you're doing and you'll squeeze the most out of it, you know, because it's a big handicap. We're going to be limited to 220 kilowatt on a Tesla supercharger. The Gravity can take over 400 kilowatt. And there are 400 kilowatt DC fast chargers along the route, a good number of them. And that would give you roughly a 7-minute advantage at each charging stop. If you were going to be smart and only charge to about 55%, you'd have about a 7-minute advantage. There's going to be 10 to 12 stops in this race. So you're talking about an hour and a half advantage if everything works perfectly and you can find 400 kilowatt stalls that are as close to the highway as superchargers are. Superchargers are notoriously positioned in great locations. Okay, so that's why there's two gravities. Now, a lot of people have been asking us, why did you race two gravities? This is how it happened. Kyle didn't intend on racing two gravities, but it just worked out that way. So he and his out-of-spec team ran Gravity 1. Me, Sip, who was the owner of it, and Michael Rauch ran Gravity 2. There was a Tesla Model X. I mentioned the other vehicles. So we started up in Fort Kent, Maine. We left at 11:22 on, I forget what day it was. Was it Saturday or whatever? And Kyle's Gravity team won, no surprise. It took them 33 hours and 20 minutes. And we came in second. We were 33 hours and 41 minutes, 21 minutes later. And only 21 minutes, in my opinion, was a huge victory for us. It meant that we really optimized the vehicle. Now, he had a couple charging issues. We had a couple issues also that probably cost us a total of about 10 or 12 minutes. We had a key fob problem. The Gravity has a notorious problem with their key fobs where they don't – you can have your key fob on you, and you get in the vehicle, and it won't turn on, and you have to pick it up and shake it. I've never seen anything like it, and then it turns on. But sometimes it doesn't work. And we were at one stop in Ashland, Virginia, where it just wouldn't turn on. We unplugged. I'm driving that leg. I hop in the car. Nothing. And we're shaking it. We get out of the car. We walk away. We lock the car, you know, let the car power down, go back in. Nothing. So finally, after like 4 minutes, we're like, well, let's just plug the thing back in. We're wasting time. If we're sitting here, we might as well be getting extra energy. So that cost us some time. But all in all, it was a blast. And we almost beat them. We had a lead on them with 200 miles to go. We had Kyle sweating and his team because they didn't want to lose to us because unless they had a catastrophic charging problem, it really meant that we optimized our time better because we had a huge disadvantage charging wise. And with like 200 miles to go, we pulled ahead of them. We were like 10 minutes ahead of them. And they didn't know if we could run that last 200 miles without stopping. If we could have, we would have beat them.
Yeah.
So Kyle had Timon like texting us and saying like, hey guys, what's your state of charge? And we're like, don't worry, we've got enough. We're either going to run out or we're going to beat you. We're going for it. We knew we couldn't at that point. You know, we knew we had to stop after about 100 miles and just make a quick stop. But even a quick stop was going to be enough to let them just creep out in front of us on the last run. And so we had them sweating, but they won fair and square. The Escalade, the Model X, came in third, 47 minutes behind the winner. IQ, which was the biggest disappointment to me, came in fourth place, and they were 1 hour 56 minutes behind. Right. Yeah, we got the graphic up there now.
Yeah.
And then you have the Rivian R1S, 2 hours and 4 minutes later, the Hyundai Ioniq 9, 2 hours, 18 minutes later, and then the Buzz, you know, really bringing up the rear, 6 hours, 27 minutes. But the interesting thing, take a look at the fourth, fifth, and sixth place. Those three end finishes were within 24 minutes of each other. So they were packed together. And, you know, that shows, if you don't count the Buzz, all the vehicles finished within like 2 hours of each other. And over a 2,000-mile drive, to me, that kind of shows how we over-obsess over charging speed on electric vehicles, because if all of these vehicles doing the best that they could over 2,000 miles only had about a two-hour difference, that's, you know, nobody drives 2,000 miles without stopping like we do. I mean, at the most, somebody might drive, I'd say, is 800 miles. Let's say you do 1,000 miles a day. The charging difference would be 1 hour.
Yeah.
Which, you know what I'm saying, Morton?
I mean, you can have dinner. So, you could may have a sandwich or something in that time, but it's not much.
And it wouldn't even be that much because normal people, when they stop at the Chargers, are going to stop and eat, you know, or you know, just take a breather. Our average stop time was under 20 minutes. So who would do that? Like, you know, so, yeah. You know, it's in real world, basically what I'm saying is that the times would be even less. If somebody really drove 2,000 miles like this and it was just like a family on a road trip, it would be less than 2 hour difference, you know, get driving across the whole U.S. So, you know, it's a service obsessing over these charging times and so forth. You know, don't get me wrong. There's value to do it, and I'm going to continue doing it, pushing the companies to try to, have faster charging speeds. But the fact of the matter is where we're at today in the market, most of the EVs charge reasonably well, not enough to make a road trip, you know, just brutal. Like, you know, the Chevy Bolts of the world aren't out there anymore. We don't have 50 kilowatt DC fast charging. Most of these cars are all going to charge, you know, close to 200 kilowatts and even average charging over 100 kilowatts for a long period of time, enough to make a road trip bearable. So,
I've got what is considered quite a slow charging EV now. So the Polestar 2 that I have, I've got the launch one. So the launch one came with LG cells, same as the Volvo XC40. Tons of performance, but not great charging. It's been improved over the years. But that's if I get 130, 140 kilowatts when the pack's empty and really warm, I'm delighted. And it makes no difference to how I drive that car and live my life. I don't do massive 2,000-mile races like this. So I love that we do this. And I love that we always give the caveat of it ultimately doesn't make a huge amount of difference when you drive – like the average person drives. I've got kids and, you know, I try not to turn up with too much of a state of charge because then the thing does charge pretty slowly. And I don't run it down too low because the car is notorious for limiting performance when you get deep into the pack on the Polestars and Volvos, almost to being unsafe. But apart from that, hey, I got a couple of questions, Tom. So on the results, we'll put them on screen right now. Apologies if you're one of our audio listeners, and we have, you know, thousands and thousands of audio listeners, so we'll talk you through this. So the Lucid Gravity 1 and 2 that came in within 20 minutes of each other hit 2.8 miles per kilowatt hour. We'll do that metric. There's other ways of measuring efficiency. Yeah. In third place, Tesla Model X is showing on screen as 3.12 miles per kilowatt hour. And people might be watching and listening thinking, whoa, hang on, you've always told us the Lucid Gravity is the efficiency king. Those numbers, like, that should be way worse for the Model X. What's the deal with how Tesla displays that 3.12 miles per kilowatt hour?
Right. So first I will say it is the most efficient vehicle, of the group. The efficiency was remarkable. With that said, Tesla does something that's a little weird with how they measure the vehicle's efficiency. I don't know exactly what it is. And I've talked to engineers from other companies, multiple companies actually, that have said that they have torn down the Teslas and so forth and said the stated efficiency doesn't add up. The vehicle's using more energy than what the displayed efficiency is. So they take something out of it. Like, for instance, they don't count the energy used when you're standing still. Like, you know, and there's always energy being used in the background. And I'm not saying that's what it was. NP Volks is saying Tesla excludes preconditioning from efficiency numbers. So they cut some things out of their efficiency numbers, whereas the other vehicles, it's all included. All of the energy that's used during that time is included. So while it shows 3.12, you know, let's say Tesla used the same way to measure their efficiency as the other vehicles, that might have said, you know, 3.05 or something like that. You know, it would have been slightly lower. Still would have been better than the other vehicles because Tesla still has efficiency nailed, you know. And, yeah. If you look at this, the Gravity was, second by a long shot from the Hyundai Ioniq 9, which was 2.4 miles per kilowatt hour. So that's a big a big difference. If you look at, you know, the Rivian, the Buzz, and the Ioniq 9, I mean, they're almost, you know, negligible, the difference in the efficiency. But the Escalade, as you could expect, you know, the 9,000-pound behemoth, you know, was 1.8, which I would have expected. I was a little disappointed, not disappointed, but I wanted to pilot the Escalade.
Really?
When Kyle first asked me to do this, he said, I'm going to put you in the Escalade. That's because he was going to be in the Gravity at the time.
Ah, okay.
You know, he was going to ride with Sepp and be in the Gravity, and he's like, I want you in the Escalade. So I was like, yeah, I want the Escalade because I'm going to beat you, you know? And I don't know if I would have, but I really wish I could have been in that vehicle. You know, I'm not saying that, and Dave, Out of Spec Dave was one of the guys. I'm not saying that the team didn't optimize. They had some thermal issues with the, the battery, you know, just derating. So I don't really know what went on. I honestly don't know what went on with the other vehicles. I mean, we were, you know, in a bubble in our own car. And yeah, I got to watch some of Kyle's videos to see some of the things that were going on. But you don't really know all of the things. Did they choose the right stops? Did they charge to the right percent? Did they, you know, I swear, I'm disappointed that the Escalade did what it did. I didn't think that we were going to beat it. I thought we were going to come in third. I believed Kyle with Gravity One and being able to charge at the 400 kilowatt charges was going to win this 100%. And I didn't know if we would beat the Escalade. I didn't think the Model X was going to beat it. Model X was on our ass the whole time. We couldn't shake them. They kept like pulling into chargers because they were using Tesla superchargers,
yeah,
obviously.
Of course.
And they kept pulling in as we were like pulling out. And I'm like, man, we can't shake these guys. They're just, you know, they were just on our tails the whole time, which I didn't expect. I thought we were going to be fighting Escalade for second place. But, you know, by half of the race, I'm like, we can't worry about Escalade anymore. But we can't let the Model X beat us.
Because
that's on us if we let them beat us. And so we were just focused on beating X. We had no... We really didn't think we were going to be this close to Kyle's Gravity team. I thought we were going to lose by an hour, honestly. But it was a blast. I'd love to redo the – if we ever do another race like this with Kyle, and I'd like to be in an Escalade IQ. I mean, I've driven them a lot. I know what they can do. I know how they can charge. I also know that you can have charging issues. All the GM vehicles can – have thermal issues at time to time, and the chargers themselves. Also, you're stressing the charger because it pulls such high current for such a long time. That if there's anything wonky about that charger, you're going to break it. You know, so you know the one thing that we didn't have to really worry about with Tesla superchargers were quality issues. The only thing we did have to worry about was we didn't want to use any V3s because we were worried about the cable overheating and then giving us thermal derating. So we worked really hard to try to only stop at the V3.5s because, you know, the liquid cooled cables weren't going to give us a problem. And we did, you know, I got to give Mike and Sip a lot of credit because that was kind of their job. Like during the whole in between legs was just searching for everyone, doing math on what we would be pulling in at, what, you know, how far it was, and we optimized it.
Yeah. Looking at the vehicles that you drove, Patrick, I'd love to know. So the Lucid, the Tesla Model X, the Cadillac Escalade IQ, Rivian R1S, Hyundai Ioniq 9, or VW ID. Buzz. Patrick, you and Liv are a hip young couple. If I'm writing a check and buying you the car, which one would you have in your driveway?
Probably because of costs and stuff.
No, I'm paying, right? I'm going to sign the check. What's the ultimate one that you have in your driveway?
Probably the Gravity.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get it. It's an engineering tour de force, right?
Yeah. And and it's not up there. If I had to buy one, like a three row, I love the Kia EV9, similar to Ioniq. So that would be like my, you know, if my wallet was open, but the Gravity is so cool. Like and I know it has software issues. I hear that they're being fixed quickly, which is a great thing about you know, these new companies, when they, if you do have Kyle criticize the software, yeah. they respond and they fix the software issues. So I love this race. It's so much fun. We did the original Race to Vegas. We haven't been able to do any of the others. Sometimes it's scheduling or whatever. And sometimes it's Kyle knows Liv and I would sandbag it, but we're doing our sort of own experiment. And it's not really an experiment, but it's like we live in North County, San Diego, and we come to Vegas quite often. So we have done a 2021 Mach-E, our 2022 Mach-E GT, a 23 Model Y, our 24 Chevy Equinox EV, the front-wheel drive with 319 miles of range, and then this trip we're in a 2025 Mustang Mach-E, premium all-wheel drive extended range, so it has like 300 miles of range versus our GT with 260. And it sort of goes back to what Tom was saying. It's like, if you're doing 2,000 miles all at once and you have a couple hours difference, what does that look like in real world? Well, in a real world, we're doing it's almost exactly 300 miles. It's the same for all of those. They have vastly different charge curves. They have vastly different ranges. But we go and we, you know, 300 miles, we, it's, you know, we can sort of stretch our GT and do one stop, but the others are easily one stop. And that one stop ends up being a burger and a pee. And it's like, you can talk about, is it going to be 15 minutes or 30 minutes? No, I'm going to go get a burger. Or actually now there's a new station in Baker, California, right next to a Mexican restaurant. So I'm going to get a California burrito. We'll go to the bathroom and we're going to be on our way. And it's just, you know, real world, Tom is 100% right, but I love these races just because it's competition and it's really always interesting seeing how, you know, we talk about auto racing and how that translates into real world cars, but taking real world cars and putting them in a race like this, I think it does put a lot of pressure on the manufacturers to do that little bit better and better. And yeah. it goes back to like, normal people doing a vacation, they're not going to do 2,000 miles in one shot. Yeah. But there are those instances, and it's like, you know, years ago I had a case where I was in Denver and my kid was staying with my or with his grandma in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and had some heart thing come up that freaked the doctors out, so they rushed them to El Paso Hospital, and I'm like, we just jumped in the car and just had to go. And we went as quickly as we could. And it's like, you better believe that 15 minute difference or 30 minutes difference was critical for me to hurry up and get down there. So 99% of the time, I'm just going to get a burger, chill out. But when I need it, it's nice to have that extra time.
Interesting what you say about addressing issues. So in the comments, the user Nobody Invited You Here says, Real Engineering's video about the air gave me pause. I know what you mean. I think you just have a slight, Real Engineering. It's Engineering Explained. So it's a channel by a chap called Jason Fenske, who is just one of the all-time great storytellers, communicators on that in that bit of YouTube space. I wish I was 1% as good as him at explaining. He should do a video on that solid state battery, because he can take really difficult concepts and explain them. And so I'm probably going to crash my computer here, but I'll try and share my Chrome tab. This is his channel. And by the looks of it, he put up a video 40 minutes ago or 50 minutes ago. So he did put a video out a month ago, which is, you can see I've watched it because it's underlined, and it was 1.1 million views now, and he had a Lucid Air, and he tears it apart, and it's not unfair, it's all the issues he's had. I see today, I'm going to go watch it straight away, Lucid responded to my critical review. The thumbnail, he's holding like he's been served a notice, does make it look a little bit like he's been served like a cease and desist or a takedown. I had a quick look at the show notes. I can't show you any of the video because the way YouTube works with copyright strikes. But in the show notes, he says that Lucid immediately reached out and put him on a call with one of their most senior people. He's called Imad Dalala. Now, this is like, you don't get to do that unless you are someone with, well, 4.17 million subscribers. And also, like, if you could pick his brain, if I worked at Lucid and could pick his brains, he spent his own money on the car. And he's very critical. I would make that time in my day if I was a senior exec at any car company. The guy's a legend. And so, of course, but the average person like you and me doesn't get that privileged access. And so hopefully Lucid can respond to his criticisms at least, but all the things that Tom, you say about the key and Patrick about needing to develop, and some of them are, for a very expensive car, a little bit inexcusable. So yeah, I'll go watch that when we finish. Or maybe if you're listening and watching to this, you might want to go and watch that. And if you're not interested in Volvos, then go do it now, because we'll finish off today talking about the Volvo EX60. This is best in class. So BMW iX3 has had all of the praise from us, I believe rightly so. Neue Klasse platform, 500 miles of range, WLTP. Not from a ridiculously large battery either. Volvo will launch the EX60, the electric version, and there won't be a combustion version of this, on the 21st of January, because Volvo is Chinese, Geely has been since they raised everybody's eyebrows in whenever it was, what, 2010? When they bought it. So or maybe whenever it was bought by them. And so they've really taken that company on a real journey. Now, the CEO and the designer that did that, so Håkan Samuelsson and Thomas Ingenlath, the CEO and designer respectively, went their separate ways. The CEO retired and the designer went on to be the CEO of Polestar. He left Polestar and he's gone back this week to be either chief design officer, or it's a more senior title. Sorry, I don't know why I put that on screen. To go back to Volvo. So a bit like the Blues Brothers, they're putting the band back together because the CEO is back as well. He'd retired, but they needed to fix a bunch of problems. So there was a British CEO that came in, correct me, I believe from Dyson. Maybe, I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm doing this. Let me stop that screen. From Dyson, maybe? But not a car guy or gal. And then the designer came into Volvo, also not from the automotive industry, brought another Brit came in, and they've both gone. And now the two guys that I think made Volvo so successful in that period where the design language came around and the cars became fantastic are back together. And now they're announcing the Volvo EX60, not their work, I should say, but they get to announce it. 505 miles WLTP range in a midsize crossover SUV, 505 miles. That'll be 400 miles ish on EPA. That's I think it's a really big deal.
They say up to 400 miles in the all-wheel drive, the dual motor version.
They've only given the specs of what will be the all-wheel drive EX60. It's a Volvo. It's all-wheel drive, right? So if there's a two-wheel drive version, who knows? So, yeah, I say all of that in the build-up to it to explain this is a Chinese company, albeit with loads of Swedish sensibilities and design and a lot of engineering done outside of China, but a lot done within. Now, Volvo made a very interesting point, I think, this week to talk about their platform, SPA3. So that's moving on from the SPA2 platform, which their current vehicles are on, like the EX90, ES90 as well, that saloon, which never gets talked about. It's a beautiful car. SPA3, they said it's a Volvo platform, making some really big deals about a lot of this is Volvo stuff, they were saying. Not saying, it wasn't a presentation, but in the press release, which I thought was interesting, because I think Polestar got really burned by using some of that Geely platform stuff. Although Polestar 3 is on the Volvo SPA2, but then the Polestar also using the Geely stuff that you see under Zeekr, the SEA platform. You know, Polestar was a small company. Volvo is still pretty small in the grand scheme. Trying to fold that all in and doing over-the-air updates and that cadence, it's really hard for a small team. Whereas with the Volvo EX60, incredible specs. They're talking about this is all Volvo stuff, and we're looking after this. I think, you know, I'm paraphrasing and reading between the lines. 505, Tom, on not a massive vehicle. I don't know the battery size. They didn't say 505 is. It's a big number, Tom. That's a that's iX3 territory and a bit more.
100%. It's it's more than what you need, but it might not be more than what you want. And that's the difference, or that's the hurdle that we have to get over. The industry has to get over as far as the perception of range with people. And that's why we're making these extraordinarily long range vehicles that are coming out now. I think, and I've said this many times, I think eventually the industry, once, you know, electric vehicles are just commonplace and, you know, most people accept them, I do expect ranges to come down a bit. Because it's going to make the vehicles cost less, they're going to charge faster, the infrastructure is going to be more robust, it'll be easy to get a quick charge, a 10, 15-minute charge to get you back up to 80. But it's important now to post these big numbers like this, because that's what people are going to look at it and say, oh, wow, like okay, now it's finally hit numbers that makes me feel comfortable driving one, like I'm not going to run out. And, you know, there's a lot of people new to EVs. You feel like, you know, once that number gets down to around 100 miles of range, they're freaking out, you know, and unnecessarily. But, you know, that it's understandable why people feel that way. And when you throw out these, you know, 400-mile range vehicles, now people look at that and say, oh, wow, I'm, you know, but by the time I get to a quarter tank, I've already driven 300 miles. That's acceptable for me, you know. And I think it's huge news. I can't wait. This is Volvo's, as you said, best-selling model, and to put forth a great effort for the electric version of, well, it's not just the electric version, the version,
yeah.
I think is good for Volvo. Let's see.
Yeah.
Do we have any information on pricing yet?
No.
Yeah. So no. That's important.
Yeah, hugely important. So they'll make this in Charleston? Where's the Volvo's made? Somebody in the comments will know and correct me. So wherever their factory is. So yeah, we'll wait and see. But this is, I think, really exciting for what is a very should be mainstream vehicle. I'm not going to pretend it's going to be cheap. I don't think any car's cheap anymore, because I think everything's expensive. But there we go. So 21st, we get to see all the details on that 800 volt architecture. They say 10-year warranty, which is all great. Some of the warranty stuff that I've seen talked about. So we have a mandate here in the UK, and you can argue whether it's working or not, is that's all tied to things like warranty length as well. There's a lot of hoops to jump through with the mandate, and also with the grant that we have the money off the EVs. So to get the money off, you've got to have got warranty guarantees and stuff like that, which I think is all very sensible and good. So do mandates work? Well, the UK released their sales figures this week, and for the second year running, the industry has slightly missed the percentage the government set. You could call it a stretch goal. A CEO, some sort of corporate organizer would call it a stretch goal that was missed. But then you would argue, well, is it better to set a big target and miss it, do a moonshot and miss it by a little bit? The car companies say we can't afford to carry on making EVs and discounting them. That's what the lobby industry says. And yet none of them will pay fines, because if you miss it by too much, you pay a big fine to the government for every car you sell. But there's enough credits in the industry, so the likes of Teslas and Polestars and the EV-only makers, to sell those credits to other car companies. So no one's going to pay a fine again for the second year. This year, by the way, our mandate is 33%. And I think probably we'll get there by the end of the year. So December, so we hit the percentage in December for BEVs, but not over the whole year. So, you know, a chief financial officer would say the opposite thing to me, because it's their bottom line. It's inconvenient and it's expensive, but it's kind of working here, guys, in the UK. The industry would say it's not, it's too expensive. We keep having to subsidize EVs, but there we go. So we'll wait and see if we take a different course to the US on that one. But we do have a mandate, unlike you guys. I think we're just about done. That is good stuff. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. Before we went live, I said, we won't keep you too long. You can go have that hotel breakfast. And you're like, nah, not at our Vegas hotel. I couldn't believe it. The best thing about going to a hotel is the hotel breakfast, and you haven't got one?
Not in Vegas.
What?
Hell no.
They charge you $8 for a latte in the hotel lobby. Yeah. So.
you're going for the $29.99 breakfast buffet.
What?
Yeah. No free breakfast in Vegas.
So our breakfast, no lie, is Liv made some oatmeal protein balls before we left home. They're in the fridge, so we'll eat three or four of those on the way over, and then we just go, and we'll see if we actually get fed at all today.
Oh man,
Martin, the one thing I was thinking about, we're talking about the Volvo, for instance, and all the cars with the ranges that are coming out. What if the donut battery is real? Even we're talking about Ford's next generation. What if this thing is real and this company can actually mass produce them like they're talking about, they could spool up quickly? It throws all of the automakers' plans and platforms into chaos, because they'd be fighting over contracts to buy this or to license it or whatever, because now almost all of the platforms that are in production are, they need to be re-engineered.
I know.
Who wouldn't want the donut battery?
It's a whole platform too. I mean, it's a whole supply chain too. It's not just the automakers. It's a whole supply chain.
Everything. That's what I'm saying.
It's huge.
It throws everything on its ass if this is real. You know what I mean?
If it works as planned,
because the fact that it lasts as long as it does, we're saying 100,000 charging cycles, and the cost and the weight and everything. If somebody's going to a Ford dealership to buy this their next generation electric vehicle, how many people are going to say, "Does it have that new donut battery?" No. We have our own battery that we've been engineering. Oh, yeah, all right, I'm out of here. You know what I mean? I want that battery. Because it will be in the news and everything if it works the way they say it is. And, this is so interesting. And it's just another reason why I can't believe that this thing can actually do what it says it will, because literally all of the companies that have platforms in production now, their next generation platforms, will have to first of all, fight to secure contracts to make this, to use this. And, they have to completely change their platform, and re-engineer everything.
Well, I was thinking the same thing, Tom, this week. What if there is a grain of truth in this whole thing, which a lot of people online, the experts saying this could be a form of supercapacitor technology, not a lithium-ion battery and not a solid-state battery in how we think of it. But what if it is one of these technologies that loses its charge? So the thing of supercapacitors is they lose their charge very quickly. And I don't know the exact amount for this particular technology per day, but what if it's 25% per day? Well, if you have a weekend motorcycle that you ride on a Saturday or Sunday in good weather or something, maybe, and you know that you've got to plug it in on Friday night because the thing's going to be empty, but you go a really long way. And there's also other issues around the discharge curve and stuff I won't get into on supercapacitors. But what if they said, but if you come back to this thing in a few days' time, it's going to be empty, but it's really lightweight and it'll go a long way and you can charge it very fast. You'd think, well, that's kind of interesting. Maybe that would have an audience. I don't know. But I'm the same as you, Tom. I'm what if there is a grain of truth in this? Yeah. What if there's not? I don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
It'd be great for the podcast.
We'll be
busy this year if this thing's real.
Amazing stuff. All right, so Patrick, you're almost going to have a 100,000K video on your channel because of that interview when it blows up, but there's lots of other stuff for people to check out on the Electric Duo. Go and subscribe.
I think we have at least a dozen videos. I'm looking over to Liv. I'm about a dozen videos that we filmed this week. I have, and don't even ask me what they all are. So we did really great one with Oshkosh. I know Kyle did some stuff with the Oshkosh that you wouldn't necessarily think is, all electric stuff, but lots of cool things. A level 4 Waymo that you can buy, basically, is as they were calling it, from Tensor. They're coming out soon, but just subscribe. You'll find it all.
Amazing. Thank you so much. You can, we see on the stats that there's a whole bunch of people that aren't subscribed to the channel. That does help us. What helps more is if you like the video, maybe leave a comment below as well, join in the conversation, because that then tells YouTube other people like you might like this video. And it's great to see 500 people tuned in live this week, almost 10,000 people tuned in to last week's show, our kind of preview of 2026, which is awesome. Amongst the two versions. So if you're still with us at this stage of the video, yeah, we do have the portrait version now for people watching on their phone. We're working out a solution to that, because it does tend, it shows up on YouTube and you can end up watching the wrong one, as it were. But we're working out how best to describe that, and it seems to go down well for people watching on their phone. So we'll work that out as well. But thank you. Whichever version you're watching, we really appreciate it. Hit subscribe, give us a thumbs up, and we will see you very soon. I did get told off last week for not ending the show properly. Hey, I've been off for Christmas. I'd forgotten how to do this. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Oh, he blew it again.
Jeez.
Here we go. Ciao. Ciao. Are we still on?
Dom, you're on mute. Look, we'll just edit this in post. Hey, thanks for joining us very much. We'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
Unbelievable.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.